Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki. I want to thank you for deciding to play Cashflow 101. And what this tape set is about, it's to give people a sense of why you should play this game, what you can expect to learn, and how to get this maximum benefit out of it. In the studio today with me is Diane Kennedy. She's more than my accountant. She's one of my strategists in business and all this. She's part of my business team. And also in the studio is Sarah Woolard, who is my graphic designer. She's helped design many of our products, the covers of our boxes, and the look of our product line. So both people are very important to the success of my business. So before I go into myself, I'd like to ask Diane Kennedy to introduce herself and why she thinks cash flow as a CPA is an important educational product.
Thank you, Robert. You know, I was thinking back in my career, and I have seen probably 10,000 different financial stories that come through the door. And frequently I see with the people who have got a great idea or have gotten involved in investments that maybe one aspect of it works, but they really didn't understand the overview, the cash flow management, how to read a financial statement, basic financial education that would help them make a decision on whether this investment makes sense. And actually, if I could just share a story, recently in the paper, we've seen the case of a person who won the lottery in New York and almost went bankrupt. The only thing that saved him was winning the lottery again in Florida. That's amazing to me. This is a person who, before he hit the first lottery, was able to pay his bills. He got suddenly a huge influx of cash, and he couldn't pay his bills. Not only that, he went bankrupt. He had more debt. He borrowed against future streams. The only thing saved him was this incredible windfall. What that tells me is, for people today, the answer frequently isn't more money for their money problems. What the answer is getting a handle on their cash flow management.
That's exactly correct. My rich dad used to say, money does not solve money problems. Money has the power to make you rich. Money has also the power to make you poor. And that's one of the reasons I created this board game, Cash Flow, and wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, was basic financial intelligence. See, money is like a loaded gun. You can use as to protect you. You can also shoot yourself in the foot with it. So that's one of the reasons I think money is a very powerful tool. If you don't know how to use it, it can be used against you. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So that's why I created these products. And now I have Sarah Woolard in this room with me. And the reason Sarah is here, after she heard the first tapes we created for Cash Flow 101, the early process probably 3 years ago, she said the problem with the tapes was that I was talking to my friends or people who were already professional investors or accountants or attorneys, and they really understood it. She says many times there were things we said on the tape she felt the average person might not be able to understand. So I invited her to be part of this taping session to represent the audience. Sarah will chime in anytime she thinks that Diane and I are going over people's head or we're using too much jargon or something may not be clear to the listener. So in many ways, Sarah will be representing the listening audience. So if you don't understand something, it's her fault, not my fault. Okay. So Sarah, would you mind saying hello and introducing yourself?
Robert has me here because I'm what I call the common people. I'm looking at these people who basically I have lived in awe of because they have walked in and on several occasions blown me away. And not blown me away because of their financial independence. It was their freedom on how they could approach things. They were free to do what they wanted to do, and I wanted to be able to get to that point. I couldn't get over my day today. I couldn't get over how these people could do this. They walked in not as the point of bankers and accountants and all these people in suits. They walked in as a normal, everyday person. And they were so casual and comfortable with the fact and how they did what they did best. I needed for myself to figure out, how did they think this way? Why is it so easy? And what's stopping me from following this? And maybe not even following this, but maybe doing it my own way by using what they have. I needed to look around and say, I am capable of this, and not by somebody laying it out in front of me and giving me a point-by-point thing. It was a point of thinking that I had to get through.
Excellent said. Sarah, by the way, is very successful. She makes a lot of money. She's one of the most competent graphic designers and communicators in the marketplace I know of. But what this tape is about and what this game is about is very simple. In the world today, as Diane taught me this and my rich dad taught me this, there's three kinds of income. There's earned income, there's passive income, and there's portfolio income. My poor dad, the school teacher, always said to me, go to school, get a job or get a profession like a doctor, lawyer, graphic designer, and work hard. The problem with that is you're working hard for money. So you go to school to learn to work for money, and that's earned income. The problem with earned income is the most highly taxed income there is. My rich dad, on the other hand, taught me to have money work for me. That was in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, lesson number one. The rich do not work for money. They know how to have money work for them. So what Sarah was saying here is what I come breezing through there in my Aloha shirt and flip-flops and no visible means of support. The reason I don't really have a job is because I have money working for me. And passive income is income from real estate, and portfolio income is paper assets such as stocks, bonds, mutual funds, insurance, and things like that. So my rich dad taught me how to have money work hard for me. You want to tell the story, Sarah, about how Kevin first saw me when I came into your office?
This gentleman comes breezing in a pair of flip-flops, a Hawaiian shirt, a baseball cap flying off the top of his head. And my partner looks at me going, who is this man? And I'm going, trust me, he's okay. He can pay the bill. And he walks out. My partner looks at me and says, what is this man? And I'm going, he's a businessman. He goes, but he doesn't look like that type of businessman. And working with Robert has always been to the point that it's not the opinion and it's not the attitude that is shown out. It's the attitude that he has from within that he brings into it. It's a viewpoint that you can't put on a white shirt and a tie and expect things to happen. Robert brings to the table how to go about it from bringing it in from inside of you.
And that's the purpose of the audio tapes. One of the reasons I do audio tapes is because repetition is the way we learn. For most of my life, or most of my adult life, I've always bought audio tapes, plugged them into my car, and even if I wasn't really listening to them, they'd be playing in the background. I'd be listening to some of the greatest thinkers and minds going. I also go to the gym, and you know, the gym is the most boring place for me. So when I'm on my either the Stairmaster or the treadmill, I listen to a tape during that time, and I'm listening to some of the better ideas of the time. And if I don't understand something, I just rewind, play it over, until it finally sinks in. And that's why it's a tape. Another reason the board game is a board game and not an electronic game is for one reason. The board game, you can repeat. You can repeat it and play it several different times and play it as often as you like. The reason it's not an electronic game is because the way we learn as human beings is cooperatively. I was talking to a psychiatrist who said if a person is introverted already or shy or lacks confidence or whatever you want to call it, if they sit in front of a TV set or a computer screen, they get more introverted. The kind of investing and business I do involves other people. So the reason it's a board game is so that, not that you compete against the, because it's not really a competition game. It's really a game designed to do business, to talk to other people, to become an extrovert, to help everybody else get out of the rat race of life and to learn. It's cooperative learning. It's practice. Yeah, it's repetition. See, we are what we repeat. In other words, if you get up and go to work every day, that's what you're repeating. If you don't learn anything else, then that's all it's called the treadmill of life. And the way we learn to drive a car is by repeating, repeating, repeating until it became automatic for us. And so many things of life we have learned. Nobody can teach us certain things. Well, there's a difference between teaching and learning. I cannot teach anybody to be a business owner, and I cannot teach anybody to be an investor. They first must want to learn it. As I cannot teach you to drive a car. You have to want to learn to drive a car. And by repeating it, you know, at first it was really high. I still remember I couldn't parallel park. That was the hardest thing. I didn't know, you know, how much gas, how much brake do you put on? How do you turn left? How do you turn right? How many curbs have I run over in the meantime or almost hit somebody else? But after about a year of that horrible practice, suddenly now I can drive down the street, eat a bagel, talk on the cell phone, listen to the radio, think about work all simultaneously while I'm driving automatically. And so that's the reason for tapes and a board game is to eventually get the learning process where it becomes automatic to you, subconscious. In computers, it's called DOS, the disk operating system. That's the core operating system. That's what teaches us how to drive. Eventually, our operating system knows how to drive. We don't have to think about it anymore. ROM, or read-only memory, is when we read something, we don't learn it. I mean, how many times have we, you know, read something and forgot it almost immediately? Or somebody comes up to me and gives me their name, and a split second later, I've already forgotten their name. And so that's like in the computer, the read-only memory. So the reason it's a tape and a board game is repetition, repetition, repetition until it goes automatic for you, much like walking or driving a car is for people.
There's also a number of lessons that are inherent in the game as you play it, and you're going to learn these at a deeper level because you're bringing in all the modalities of learning. You're reading the cards, you're reading material that comes along with this, you're listening to tapes, listening to the other people there, you're writing. There's some physical things you have to do as part of this game. That's why there's scorecards and not a computer simulated game that does the calculation. The act of writing this helps reinforce the learning. And finally, there's action that you take. There is playing the game. They're doing things.
The reason it is a pencil and erase and all this, you have visual, auditorial, physical, as well as human interaction, as well as physical operation of the game. So it's much like driving a car. As I said, you cannot learn to drive a car via lecture. One of the things I really disliked about school was, number one, they were teaching me things I didn't want to learn. I'd say to myself, why am I learning this stuff? I'm never going to use it. And then the worst thing that happened in school is they taught me not to make a mistake. So they'd lecture you, and then they'd tell you, now don't make any mistakes. Now, if you don't make a mistake, that means you're always afraid of trying something new. And the way a human being is designed to learn is by making mistakes. And so if you don't fall off a bicycle, you know, if you say, I'm going to ride a bicycle, but I'm never going to fall off, the chances are you'll never learn to do that. So you'll never learn to ride a bicycle. The same as investing. If you're terrified of making a mistake, the chances are you'll never learn to be an investor. If you're afraid of taking a risk, you'll probably not start your own company or your own business. And at that point, that's a choice. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's a choice you make. So the game, this tape, are intermediary steps for you either becoming a business owner or becoming an investor, if you so choose.
It's also great that you get to play in an environment that's safe and take on new challenges and try something out, see if this will work, and realize that it is a game, it's a safe environment.
Well, you see an immediate cause and effect because you are playing with other people and you make a decision, and whether the decision is right or wrong, you're seeing what the repercussions are. And then you also get to see how other people are doing their end of the deal.
In the real life of investing, there is no right or wrong. There's just things you do. It's like making a step to the left and making a step to the right. You don't make a step to the right and make a wrong step. That's how we make progress. So most people, when they invest, are looking for that hot tip or that one deal that'll make them rich, solve all their money problems. Well, that's not real life. As Diane says, people try and win the lottery today. When they interview Americans, it's really sad. The only way they know how to get rich is win the lottery, and that's the biggest gamble there is. And this guy who won too, I should go talk to him because he must know something I don't know. But anyway, those the main things about the game is, number one, it's repetition, and you can play with different people. You can learn a lot of things. And also the tapes, listen to them at least 3 or 4 times, and the ideas will begin to sink in because you don't hear everything we're saying right now. So, I'll give you a story of how and why this game is important to me. Is my rich dad used to, for those who read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he would take me through the financial statements, financial statements, financial statements. And around 1980, I started my business. It was a nylon and Velcro wallet business that went worldwide, and I was extremely successful. We were making millions of dollars, and then the next day we were broke. And I couldn't understand why. And I went to see my rich dad in Honolulu, and he fundamentally just closed the door, and he started screaming at me. The secretaries were running for cover and all this. He was a good man, but he says, we've all had this problem, is that we don't listen. So the reason he was screaming was, I don't listen. And he kept telling me how important income statements and balance sheets were, how they related to each other, why financial statements were very important. And I said, yeah, I know. And now that I went broke, he knew I did not know. The proof was in the bankruptcy of the business. And he started screaming. He says, I've told you, and I've been telling you since you're 9 years old. By this time, I was 30 years old. He says, I've been telling you all your life how important financial statements are, but you don't listen. He says, I don't want to hear from you again until you understand how to read and understand the importance of financial statements. Don't come back again. And I left with a tail between my legs. The secretaries were all cringing as I went out the door. And it was about 5 or 6 years before I came back to see him again. I called him every so often and said, I don't want to talk to you. Not until you understand it, I don't want to talk to you. And so you can ask my wife, Kim, about this. I think it was 88 or 89. I walked back into his office and knocked on his door. And he looked up at me and he says, you understand now, don't you? I said, yes, sir, I do. He says, good, now get out of here. Now you understand how money really works. Now you never have to borrow money, or you know, you're not afraid. Fear is what holds most people back. Lack of self-confidence would hold people back. Fear of losing pulls people back. Making mistakes would hold individuals back. So that's why I created a board game. So you play with paper money. You know, live dangerously. Bet $100. You know, it's not real money. You'd be surprised how in a game, this is the important part about a game reflects your true behavior. it really reflects your true behavior. In other words, if you're ultra conservative, you'll get a really hot stock deal. And instead of betting $10,000, you might bet $10. And at that moment, the game is reflecting back your core, as Sarah was saying, who you are on the inside starts to come out on the game board. The financial statement is very important because in real life, your financial statement is your report card after you leave school. A financial statement is looking at a mirror. It tells you how well you're doing or how poorly you're doing, what's missing, what you need to correct, what you need to add to it. So financial statements are vitally important. Would you agree with that, Diane?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up. This was a conversation Robert and I had recently when I was kind of sharing my frustration. As people come in and go through our intake process through our practice, we have people basically go through a profile that pulls that information, where they are now with their financial statement, whereas if they want to go. That can be the most painful thing some of these people have ever done. And along with that frequently comes a lot of stories. And we talk about it, that kind of the three elements you can see: either they want to blame somebody, they want to justify where it is, and in rare instances, they want to take responsibility, learn, and step up.
What a financial statement is, it's like looking in the mirror, except it's now with numbers, or climbing on a scale, and you're 5'2" and 195 pounds. The scale's trying to give you some little feedback system here. Or when you go to a doctor, the doctor will pull a blood test or an x-ray or an MRI. What they're trying to do is see the inside of you. So when people who don't know how a financial statement works, and most people leave high school not knowing really how to balance a checkbook, much less a financial statement. So when you look at a financial statement, that's like taking a blood test or an x-ray. And when people actually see what's going on with them, as my friend Keith Cunningham always says, they find out they have cancer of the financial statement. And if they don't correct it, they're going to either bankrupt or die broke, or so they don't have the ability to make corrections. And so what Diane is saying is when people come in after they're 45 years old, 50 years old, and they fill out the financial, and they find out they're in very bad financial shape, that's when the excuses come up, the lay blame. And they want to make the reasons are, you know, the reasons are, is my wife spends too much money. I would invest, but my wife is afraid.
The thing that's interesting, too, is that just with this game, as you play the game, what you'll do is pull a card, and you're stepping into somebody's shoes. You might pull the doctor card, in which case you have a high income, and you have a lot of debt that's coming along with it. Well, you now step in, just like in real life, where you are today, you have a financial statement that reflects where you are up to now. But now, in the case of the game, you have an opportunity to change what the way that looks. You're going to play so that you get out of the rat race, which means that your passive income, money that you don't have to work for, exceeds your expenses. And for clients that come in to me, most of them, that is their goal. And so they come in with a financial statement. When they can accept responsibility, okay, this is where I am, and what do I need to change? They will make remarkable progress. And when you lay that with the foundational skills you learn from playing cash flow, it's exponential. You can see change within 6 months that up until then you've broken patterns that have taken 40 years to get there.
What Diane is saying really quickly is most people think they're rich if they have a high income. In other words, earned income. Oh, he makes $500,000 a year. Well, it doesn't mean you're rich. What really makes you rich is the process called investing, where you convert earned income to either passive income, which is income from buying real estate, or portfolio, which is buying stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. That's how you know you're rich. And when most people pull their financials up, they find out they have lots of earned income, but they have no passive and no portfolio. And that's when the lights go on for them. They have the wrong kind of income.
Well, you learn to prepare no matter what life throws at you. As she said, that you may pull the doctor card, you may pull the other card, but you learn to take what you have and work with it. You learn the strategies on how to get your money to work for you, no matter how much is coming in the door.
That's a very good point. You see, most people think cash flow is the game board with the two tracks on it. If you look at your game board right now, you'll find the fast track and the rat race. When Sarah was saying, like I'm blowing in my Aloha shirt, my flip-flops and shorts, it's because I'm on the fast track. Nobody really sees me. My income is coming from assets like real estate and my stocks and my other companies. So I don't need to see anybody because it's all income that I don't have to work for anymore. But the real game board is actually the financial statement, the income statement and balance sheet. It's also the profession cards, like a doctor to a janitor. What you'll find out is, you know, the doctors make more money. They also, on these cards, have higher expenses. The janitor makes less money, but correspondingly less expenses. One of the objects of the game is what people find out. It doesn't make a difference if you're a doctor or a janitor. You can still win the game. It has nothing to do with earned income. It has nothing to do with how much money you make. The other part of the game board are the cards. You'll find big deal cards, small deal cards, market cards, and doodad cards. Those are all real life cards over there. So those are really the game boards. I think the game board or the small track and the big track are just an illusion sitting in front of you. And so when people start playing the game, one of the objectives is how fast can you get out of that rat race on a consistent basis. So what I recommend is this: play that game at least 2 times. It might take you 4 hours to understand the game the first time, maybe 5 hours a second time. That's like learning to ride a bicycle. It's difficult at first. You're learning so many multiple parts simultaneously. Then what you want to figure out is, can I get out of that rat race on a consistent basis in less than an hour? Not that you'll always do it, but can you get out of the rat race in less than an hour? And it doesn't make a difference what profession you are. In other words, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a janitor, it doesn't make any difference. At that point, you've truly mastered the game because, as Sarah says, no matter what life throws at you, you're prepared.
There's another element on that, too. As you're playing the game, you start off with a static position. You've got the janitor card, the mechanic card. Also, as you play the game, there will be times when you're not getting cards. Nobody at the table's getting any deals. Nothing's coming up. As opposed to another time when there seems to be a lot of bad luck getting drawn. Well, that's real life. Things tend to just happen, and there's an environment outside of our control. And as Sarah pointed out, the key is to plan, not predict. And part of the planning is to have available different strategies, different ways of doing things, depending on what happens.
How the cards are falling for you at this moment. You know, whether they're good cards, bad cards. So if Sarah's winning the game ahead of me, it doesn't mean she's better than me. It's the cards aren't coming in my direction. So am I going to just sit there like a bump on the log, like a lot of people do? Well, I've been in this job 30 years. I'm going to stay another 20 years. And that's what most people do. So that's what Diane and I came up with a list, because after playing the game, one of the most, the fun part about the game is you see all the cast of characters. Like I said, what the game does, it reflects back to you who you are. And so these cast of characters come up. One of the first cast of characters to see is the bill payer. They think the way to get rich is they pay off their bills. And these are the people who believe in living cheap, being frugal, and trying to get rich. Now, you can get rich by being cheap. The problem is, you're still cheap. And why be cheap and be rich? It never made any sense to me.
The other one that we came up with was the gambler. And that's the guy who's just any deal that he draws, he's buying. Every deal is a good deal. Just buy it, buy it, buy it, buy it.
Right. And the bill payers, that one, I'll see them, they go, well, I just hate debt. And there's a lot of people going around who are saying debt is bad. Well, that's true for 90% of the cases. But a sophisticated investor knows there's good debt and bad debt. So as you're playing this game, after you play it 4, 5, 6, 7 times, you'll see that there's good debt and bad debt. And what a true sophisticated investor knows is what's good debt and bad debt. Bad debt is money that takes money from your pocket. I'm in debt up to my eyeballs. Diane is my accountant, and she knows this. I have millions of dollars of debt, but it's debt that makes me rich. So people who are saying debt is bad, cut up your credit cards, they're not a very sophisticated person. And that's the bill payer mentality. As I said, most bill payers never get rich.
It's interesting, as we talk about debt, as you're playing the game, there will be times when you might want to take a loan from the bank to buy an investment. That's a case of a debt that's feeding an asset that's going to put money in your pocket. That's opposed to the debt that other people will run up called consumer debt.
And yeah, in this game, they're called doodads, right? And in this game, they're big boats and television sets and all this. But what most people really enjoy buying, we punish you in this game. And so speaking of debt, then there's the other player who shows up on the table. Like I said, the game reflects your true behavior. So you have the bill payer, you have the gambler, and you have the big dog. And the big dog is a person who has no money, but instead of going for the small deal stack, they go for the big deal stack. And they want to pretend that the bigger the deal, the better. And I see these guys all day long. If the deal is not big, they're not playing. They talk big stories and all this. But if you check their financial, what's the story about the hats?
Well, right. In Texas, they say it's all hat and no cattle. In other words, there's a lot of show, but there's nothing back at the ranch to pack it up. But those are the guys who are driving around, and they're doing big deals. And they show up, we call them the big dogs at the table.
They're the guys that own the Jaguar but can't afford the tires on it.
Exactly.
But they're always talking about the big deal they did. In reality, what I've found out the hard way, it's the small deals that make you rich. In other words, it's the real micro-cap stocks that make the people the richest. In other words, you know, people say, well, give me a stock tip. I said, you should have bought Microsoft before it went public. That's where you make your money, when it was unknown. But people are buying when there's a blue chip, and they wonder why they don't make so much money, because it costs them so much money to buy one share of Microsoft. You should have bought it when it was $10 a share. That's when you should have bought it. And so it's the small deals that actually make you the richest in real life. But the big dogs out there are always talking about the blue chip, or my broker said this. The formula for rich taught in Monopoly is 4 greenhouses, 1031 tax defer, exchange it into a red hotel, repeat process. I mean, it's not rocket science. You start with the small deals, and that's one of the biggest messages I want to give people. If you have nothing, start with small deals and stay with small deals. That's all you need to do, and you'll get there. The other characters we see show up at the table, you know, you're playing four or five people, is the codependent investor. This is the person who knows nothing. And the way they figure they're going to get ahead is they want to pool their money. It's called Marxism in some levels, but they all want to get together with their friends. And what you have is four losers getting together to buy a losing deal.
You're right. And actually it shows up in, oh, let's just pool our money so we can do this. But they're not looking at what the deal is and whether the deal even makes sense. But what they're looking for is just a buddy that kind of comes in with them, and then it'll be okay, because if they lose, then everybody loses. Or
they're not trusting themselves.
Exactly.
They're trusting someone else's opinion.
Well, they think there's comfort in numbers. And there's nothing wrong with it, because if you know what you're doing and you hang out with other people who know what you're doing, you have a better chance of success. But all too often I've seen in the real world, people come up and they're a bunch of losers, and they get together to lose big as a group because they don't know what they're doing. They want to pool their money. In Hawaii, it's called a hui. You get together with a hui. And what they are a bunch of small guys who try and act big. And you'll see it on this game board. They'll show up.
Another one is the born loser. And I see those every once in a while. That is the person who, no matter what, lands on the square that says doodad. And when they pull the card, they don't have any money, but they got a big screen TV. Or they had to buy a cell phone. And every card, there's no opportunity. They just keep hitting bad cards. And pretty soon they have an attitude of, well, it doesn't matter. I'm just a born loser. I've always got bad luck.
And in the real world, they exist. They are often people who don't invest at all, because they don't invest because they figure, I'm going to lose anyway. I mean, the core is saying, oh, what the heck, I'm going to lose anyway. If everybody else buys that stock, I'll lose as soon as I buy it. And so what I'm saying again is the game reflects your behavior. And it seems like magic, but I've played this game hundreds of times now, and I've really seen it, that the cards drawn like magic really reflect the person, and sometimes reflect exactly where I am at that moment. When I'm not interested in a game, the game doesn't work. When I'm playing to win, the game works. So the games have a powerful psychological basis to it, and all these cast of characters show up. So as you're playing this game, watch what character you are at that moment. But also the best part is to watch other people's behavior, because that's really how you learn. And that's why it's a board game, again, and not an electronic game, because life is about operating with human beings, not a computer screen.
Now, that actually is what another powerful skill you'll pick up in playing the game is you'll start to recognize these different characters, not only in yourself, but in a heartbeat, you'll see them when they show up in somebody else. Isn't that a great skill when you're thinking about investing in real life?
Well, it's amazing. As a man, I meet so many males who have the big dog tendency, and they're always talking about the big deals. Yeah, you know, I bought Microsoft today. What they don't tell you is they only bought 2 shares of it, or they got 3 shares. Yeah, it's split. Man, I doubled my money. How much did you make? $1,000. They talk big, but they're broke. That's why I brought Diane here as a person who prepares people's financial statements. You see a lot of people who look good on the surface, right? Big house, big car, a lot of flash, big Rolex watches and all this. But beneath that, they're broke, right?
All hat, no cattle.
And the same thing when you start dating a person. They look good on the surface, but they're rotten on the inside. That's what the game brings out, is it brings out the real, true behavior of that person at that moment, given a certain set of circumstances. And that's why the game is just more than a financial statement. It really is showing you the cast of characters that are played in real life.
Another one is the cynic. Boy, this shows up. They what if at every deal, well, I don't know, you know, what if something goes wrong?
That's my neighbor. This guy, when I played this game with him, every card, he'd pull a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Oh, I know what's going to happen. The toilet's going to blow up. I know the next card, the toilet's going to blow up. I'm going to lose all my money. Then I get a card for stock, $5. Oh, I know the market's going to crash. I'm going to lose all my money. He doesn't realize that what's coming out onto the board game is his true thoughts. And if he has the responsibility to look at that, oh my good, maybe I'm doing this in real life. Not all the time, but in certain parts of the time. And the skeptic and the cynic is also a person who never wins. They never win because they're always afraid of losing, which again, you learn from your family and in school, a lot of it is embedded in you. Don't make mistakes. You know, if you do this, this might happen. Well, you were telling me about that course you taught about the IRS and people live in fear of the IRS.
That was a huge experience. I went through a seminar just recently. I did. And we talked about what blocks people had toward money.
And tax strategies, right?
Well, actually, it was just money in general. First one anyone said in the room was fear of the IRS.
And for people who are not from the U.S., it's the Internal Revenue Service or a tax revenue people.
Yeah, and
people.
You see that with whichever country you're in. In fact, actually, in this room, we had some Canadians, and we also had a man from New Zealand. Same fear across the board. Wherever they were at, it was a fear that this taxing agency is somehow going to do something. The room exploded when that fear was brought up, and people responded to that.
The acronym FEAR, F-E-A-R, stands for false evidence appearing real. And this happens in a trade. It happens when buying something. It happens in tax strategy, corporate strategy, and all this. Most people are so cynical, skeptical, or they're the born loser that they do nothing. They live in these false evidences. And the reality is the tax code is written for those who want to be rich. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
But the reason they give you breaks for being a business owner is because you provide jobs, you bring revenue. The reason they give you breaks for real estate is because you provide housing. So my poor dad oftentimes said to me, he says, you know, Robert, you're a crook. And I said, why? He says, because you're breaking the law. And what most people don't realize when you read the book Cash Flow Quadrant, which is about the employee, the self-employed or small business owner, B for business owner or big business owner, and I for investor, the tax laws are different for different people. So while my dad was correct when he says that's against the law, it's against the law for an employee to do that, but it's not against the law for a business owner to do something. So oftentimes throughout the world, these born losers or cynics will always say to me, you can't do that, or that's against the law. And what they really do not know what they're talking about. Unfortunately, these people affect or impact a lot of the friends and family around them. They'll tell you why it can't be done, but they can't tell you how it could be done. And so I want to say that those people show up on this game board all the time.
A couple of variations on that statement. It's always stated emphatically, you can't do that, is you can't do that here, or you
right.
can't do that anymore. Those are variations on the same thing. And when you hear that, my suggestion is instead to say, well, how can I do that?
In America, the tax code would take you 325 years to read, if you could read it 300 words per minute. In other words, nobody knows all the laws. And besides, laws are not really laws, they're guidelines. And they're subject to interpretation. This different situations is legal, different situations is illegal. But most people pretend to be junior accountants or junior attorneys, and they say, oh, you can't do that, and they shut their mind off. Really what's shutting their mind off is their lack of confidence, lack of skill, lack of education, and a pure sense of despair anyway.
And the same thing shows up with real estate investing. I loved Robert's story just now when he was saying somebody drew a card, because I hear that with people who don't want to invest in real estate rental properties. It's always, I don't want to have to fix the toilet at 3 a.m. Now, I've owned property for over 20 years. I don't know about you, Robert, but I have never fixed a toilet at 3 a.m.
I can't fix a toilet, and they don't call me anyway. They call my management company. But that's because most people, when they come to investing, they think like self-employed, the S, I got to do it on my own, or if you know nobody does it better than me. I don't want to do that. I invest as a business owner, and there's a very big difference.
You have learned how to make things work for you.
But that's the point. When you read Cash Flow Quadrant, most people go to school to learn to be employees or self-employed. My rich dad was teaching me to be a business owner and an investor. And so Cash Flow, the game, is really designed to start busting up some of the hardcore paradigms or thought patterns of I have to do it on my own, or nobody does it better than me, or I can't do that, or it's illegal. And all those things are actually internal things. Exactly as I said earlier, Sarah, they're internal and they reflect the external. And the game brings out the internal reflected as an external process.
Another character that we see too is the analyzer, or I call them the analyzer. They're the person who is constantly checking the numbers. If you've played this game more than a couple of times and it's still taking 4 or 5 hours to get through it, guaranteed there's somebody sitting at that table who is constantly checking numbers, not moving forward. That someone may be you too, by the way. In real life, that's the person who never moves forward on a deal because they're too busy running the numbers. They know a lot of different investment strategies. They may go to a lot of different seminars, but they never take action because there's just never enough time to get all the data run.
But another thing about the analyzing, you've noticed on the Game Boy, we ask you to be an auditor of somebody else's financial statement. That's a way of checking and balancing each other. But I've always found in school, one of the silliest things I thought about school, number one, was they taught you not to make mistakes. Yet the way we learn is by making mistakes. I learned more. The reason I sit here is because I've made more mistakes investment-wise. The other thing is we learn to do things on our own. We take tests on our own. And so we become very lonely people. The reality is, in the real world, outside of school, investing is a team sport. Business is a team sport. So in school, cooperation at test time is called cheating. In the real world, it's called cooperation. So in the real world, the reason I have Diane here or Sarah here and all this, my business is a team sport. I bring in the smartest people I know because I don't know that much. God knows that. And I operate as a team player. So the reason we help each other out is I want everybody to win. But too many investors, especially those electronic day traders and all that, they're trying to do it on their own. They're trying to do their real estate investing on their own. I'll say it again. In the real world, it's a team sport. That would be like me trying to play against a football team as an individual. You get crushed. You know, the doctors right now, medical doctors, are trying to play against the HMOs, and they're being crushed as individuals. So on the E and the S side, they operate as individuals. When you operate as an individual, you got to form a union, like the labor union or the teachers union or the pilots union. But on the B and I side, they operate as a conglomerate or a synergy of different skills. So who is on my team? Number one is a financial planner. Number two is a tax accountant, tax attorneys. I have bankers. I have brokers. I have salespeople, all supporting my efforts. So when I do a trade or an investment, I'm always checking first. Even the most professional electronic traders for banks and all that, they have a manager standing behind them to check their trades. So one of the worst habits I've seen of individuals is they want to play on their own rather than help other people win too. And I've learned more by trying to help other people. That's why this board game, you know, once you learn it, bring in people and watch them play and help them teach. And they may not learn anything, but you'll learn a lot by seeing the way they do things in life because the game will reflect exactly what's going on in their life at that moment.
I want to make a distinction, too, between the cooperative effort that we're talking about right now as opposed to the codependent investor. The codependent investor is playing to their weakness. They're weak in this, and they're bringing other people that are also weak. The cooperative person, the way Robert does it, is he finds the best. He's got Sarah, who's the best at graphics, doing his graphics. God knows he doesn't have me doing his graphics. I can't draw. I work on tax strategies. He builds a team that brings their best abilities forward so everybody wins.
That's correct. It's called cooperative. My poor dad was a school teacher. He always thought that he had to be the smartest and he had to be the best and he had to do it on his own. He thought he was John Wayne or something. And the trouble is, in real life, that's not the way it is. You know, my rich dad used to say, if you're the smartest guy in your team's in trouble. Really, what you're trying to do is bring the very best around you, not the weakest. And too often, as I say to people, well, you know, that advice costs a lot of money. You know, Diane cost me a lot of money. My accountant cost me a lot of money. I say, yes, but the worst advice you get is free advice. And that's the advice you get from your friends, your brother-in-law, your sister-in-law, your taxi driver. And that's the worst advice. And that's why poor people very seldom get rich is because they have a lot of free advice. And the game is designed to teach and help each other, not be codependent, exactly as Diane says. It's a very big difference. Make them strong, I get strong. But I don't need to do your deal. You do your deal, I do my deal. There's my rich dad and my poor dad. My poor dad, being a corporate kind of guy, government corporate guy, he saw the world as scarce. He saw that for him to advance, somebody else had to lose. Whereas an entrepreneur sees exactly the difference. My problem is I see so much opportunity all the time, this abundance. So one of the biggest differences I saw between my rich dad and my poor dad saw a world, a financial world of not enough money. That's why you always say, you know, they think money grows on trees. You think I'm made of money? And so he always operated from the point of view of money as being scarcity. There was not enough money in our family, and that became reality. So whatever exactly says, Sarah, what's inside of you shows up on the outside. If you think there's not enough money, guess what? There'll be not enough money. My rich dad, on the other hand, said, man, there's so much money out there. How much can I get of it? And he is always out there operating, cooperating, because he could make more money by cooperating. And he had plenty of money. That's why he never worried about money. When Donald Trump, right after the 86 Tax Reform Act, when he lost everything, he went down to a tune of $900 million personally and $9 billion corporately. And somebody says, are you worried? He goes, no. Worrying just gets in the way of me doing my job, is to make that money back. And what most people do who are not trained on financial statements or how to transact a deal, they live in fear. Fear of the IRS, fear of the government, fear of making a mistake, fear of what bad advice, and so they get free advice. They live in this false environment of fear that reflects on their financial statements.
But isn't the point of cash flow motion? And what you're saying right now is if you stay in your own little nutshell, you're not going to have that motion.
That's correct.
You won't gain, you won't go forward, you won't be able to take the attributes that other people have and the other deals that are out there.
Right.
But the idea of flowing cash flow, you have to keep motion.
That's correct. And the financial statement, the income statement, and the balance sheet, what you learn by mastering that financial statement, that's like a vehicle. That's like learning how to drive. At that point, I don't have to tell you where to go. You know, once you learn how to drive, Sarah can go to wherever she wants to go. She drive down any street, any freeway, go to any other country, and you can drive over there. That's the purpose of learning the financial statement. It gives you freedom to move, to do things. For instance, when people say investing is risky, of course it's risky if you can't analyze a deal. In other words, when you look at your game box, you pull out a financial statement, that's a personal financial statement. But so does a real estate property, a building, it has its own financial statement. And a business has its own financial statement. So once you understand that everything around you has a financial statement, your child has a financial statement, the government has a financial statement, post office has a financial statement, IBM has a financial statement, real estate investment has a financial statement. Once you understand that, you can read financial literacy. So it's not about risk. Why would I buy something if I can't read it? And so that's what a financial statement gives. That gives you motion. It gives you freedom to move. It's like learning to drive a car. I can go anywhere in the world and drive a car. I can drive anywhere I want to and go off for what I want to. It doesn't make any difference. So that's the importance of financial literacy and this board game.
The other point of this, too, is we talked about fear. The best way to defeat fear is to gain knowledge. Many people today are absolutely terrified of their financial situation. Cash flow is going to give them the tools to get a handle so they can at least know where they are and how to start planning where they're going to go. With that knowledge, they then will gain the confidence it needs to move forward. And that's how you know when you've won. It's when you truly can take any situation in this game and move forward with confidence that you know the right strategy in the situation.
That's best for you.
And you will take that same confidence out in the real world as deals show up.
Education inspires confidence, and then the confidence moves on. A lot of people, the reason we're talking about the big dog and all this stuff, they're bluffing. They're pretending they know what they're doing. You don't have to fall prey to that person. That's why I read in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the banker says your house is an asset. Well, if you read the financial, he's not lying to you. He's just not saying whose asset it is. It's his asset. And then you don't have to take that kind of intimidation. Well, I'm a banker and you don't know anything, or I'm an accountant and you don't know anything. You don't have to be intimidated by people who pretend to know more than you. Well, I'm a stockbroker. I know what's best for you.
It's interesting when that type of personality sits down at the game, too. That's another character that comes out, and that's the know-it-all.
Right.
I know this all already. Of course, if you looked at their financial statement, they don't know.
If you have somebody you're playing this game with and they pretend to know it all, ask them how come they're not winning the game. If they know all the answers, how come they're not winning? I admit, I know this, But they're the ones not getting out of the rat race. Or if they do it once, they don't do it the second time. It's a strategy. You know, strategy may work this time, it won't work the next time. So in real life, these know-it-alls always show up. I've always found them pretty interesting because they're the ones who eventually go broke somewhere down the road when the strategy changes. That's like investing in hula hoops. You might be a millionaire today and broke the next day because no one wants hula hoops anymore. And that's what happens to these know-it-alls. Like right now, as we talk, blue chip and large cap stocks are in fashion. So everybody thinks, oh, yeah, I'm just buy blue chips. Well, the market can change like that. It's the same as in real estate. It can change like that. And so these know-it-alls are the ones, because I've been the know-it-all, so I know I've been wiped out that way too. So it comes from personal experience. The other person is the borrower. As soon as they get in the game, the way they want to win is borrow. They don't find out how much liquid assets they have at that moment, so they want to borrow. There's one more character you can play this game with. And that's somebody who you've been arguing with, like it could be your brother-in-law, your sister, whatever it is. Sit down and play this game with them, and you will find out exactly the differences between the two of you. It has been so exciting for me to play with people I actually dislike. I invite them to play the game, and I can sit there and harangue them for a while. It makes it worse, but all of a sudden you begin to realize why you're so different. The reason I have Diane here is as an accountant, no two people spend their money exactly the same way. Everybody has different values and different strategies, and what the game brings out are the different strategies. The point I'm trying to make here is not any one of these strategies is right, and neither is it wrong. The point of it is to be a successful investor, you have to be what? All of them. You have to be all of them. You have to know when to borrow. You have to know when to save. You have to know when to pay bills, know when to be the big dog and bluff your way through it, know when to be the small deal player, know when to help somebody else. You have to know when to be the codependent investor sometimes. Say, well, can you give me some help here? You're not asking for so much to do a deal together. I really need help. Can you give me some advice over here? In reality, is I have been all of these characters, and that's what gives me a well-rounded basis to be an investor. For example, if I have a lot of money and I have no deals coming to me, I become a bill payer. In other words, I'll pay off my bills at that moment. If I have no money and I'm losing the game and I, you know, everybody else is winning the game, at that point I might become the gambler. I might take some huge risk just to see if I can win the game.
A couple of others, if you end up with a card, say, that's the doctor or the lawyer that has a lot of debt, sometimes the only way you're going to win that is if you turn into one of the big dogs. So it becomes real fun to first identify the different characters and then see how you can use them. If you see somebody you're playing with who's got a character that you've never really tried on before, try it. This is a safe environment. See how that works. See when that can work for you in real life.
Especially if you're ultra conservative and fear of taking risks, then you may say, this game, whether you're the doctor or the janitor or the airline pilot, this game, I'm going to play it as a gambler. I'm going to take all the big risks and get it out of your system, because that's what's holding you back anyway. So play it, you know, live dangerously. It's paper money. But after a while, the object of the game will become that no matter what profession you have, be a janitor or doctor or airline pilot, no matter which way the cards come, no matter what situation happens to you, you'll be able to get out of the rat race in an hour or less. It doesn't make any difference. And once you know that, that goes to self-confidence. And self-confidence gives you the ability to, as Sarah says, to move, to take looks, to move around. But these things I cannot teach you. The person must want to learn this. There's one last thing is people say, well, I can't find anybody who wants to play this game with me. That's a reflection also. What that means, you're hanging out with people who don't want to learn this.
Robert, do you have some guidelines for people who've bought this on what do we do now? How do we put together a group?
Well, the first thing is you got to find people who are interested in learning. See, if you have a bunch of big dogs around you or the big deal guys or the I-know-it-all people, you're not going to learn from them anyway. You're wasting your time hanging out with them. But every time I've made a change in my life, I've changed my friends. I've changed my advisors. I've changed the people I hang out with. Today, my best friends are accountants, attorneys, and other business owners or stockbrokers or real estate brokers and all that, because we all share something in common. We want to be rich. I like having a lot of free time, and I like having a lot of money. One of the things that I ask people to do in the book Cash Flow Quadrant, which is book two of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is write down the list of your six friends around you. Are they employees? Are they self-employed? Are they business owners? Are they investors? See, those six people are also, much like a financial statement, they're reflecting back to you who you are at that moment and what you're interested in. Birds of a feather do flock together. So if you can't find anybody to play this game with, that should tell you something about who you're hanging out with. And at this point, you may want to start finding people who are interested in learning how to have money work for them so they don't have to work as hard for their money. And that's how you learn, is you really do change your friends. All of life is basically a mirror.
Thank you for listening to this tape. For additional information about Cashflow Technologies and Robert Kiyosaki, please visit our website at richdad.com.